Hi, today is January 30th, 2022. This is Mobile Views Podcast 391. I'm Todd Agassaward, my good friend John Westfall, and today we were lucky to have Don Sarcinelli join us. We haven't seen him since September of last year. He was supposed to be on earlier, but I think I had a storm problem, like no power.
You did.
I had no power. So I had a couple of issues.
I remember that being the podcast where I'm like, aren't I supposed to be on a podcast, but I haven't heard anything from Todd? And then I went, oh, wait, I remember watching on TV that, like, the apocalypse was happening in terms of weather where he was.
Yeah, that was lots of fun. Our building, office building, lost power for 6 hours. Fortunately, it was on a generator. So, you know, things kept running. But that was a little dicey. Downtown Honolulu, parts of downtown Honolulu, like within 2-3 blocks of where my building is, they're out of power for 3 days. So it was not a lot of fun. And I know one basement office facility or office was in the basement got flooded. And they're having to like rip and tear right now. But speaking of weather, so Don, you are in the great state of New Hampshire. And how's the nor'easter
correct.
Treating you?
So it was interesting. We officially here in lovely scenic Salem, New Hampshire, not to be confused with Salem, Massachusetts and the witches.
And Salem, Oregon.
Yep, Salem, New Hampshire, right on the border with Mass, due north of Boston. We received 14 inches. More importantly, it was, fortunately for us, it was as they like to call it, the light and fluffy stuff. But man, you want to talk about blizzard conditions. Normally during a lot of these storms, I'll go out and try and clean up during the storm if it isn't too bad. You know, just so you get halfway through and you clean up some of it so you don't have to do it all the way in the end. And yeah, no, this one, I looked out the window early last evening and went, yeah, since I can't see across the street, I think I'm going to stay inside.
There you go.
Yeah, that's usually when you can't see past your driveway and you don't have a long driveway. Yeah. That's usually an indicator. You say to yourself, "No, I think it's a good time to watch a movie."
Yeah, if you don't have a 100-acre estate and you can't see your driveway,
Yeah.
So, the problem I recall from my childhood is if you let that snow sit there and start packing, man, it is
Yep. So that's why first thing this morning, the cleanup crew, which consists of myself and my two sons, went out there because it also turned out we didn't get the wind died down an awful lot more than they expected. It was almost no wind this morning early and it was very sunny. So I said, yes, I don't want melt to start to occur.
Yeah.
Right now we have light and fluffy. I don't want slushy and weighing a ton. So
yeah.
We got it all cleaned up in pretty short order, like I said. So, and as a matter of fact, I hearty New Englander. I went out and did my grocery shopping this morning.
Well, I'm glad you have power, first of all.
Yes. Yep. We never lost power, and which was good so that we didn't lose our minds. But yeah, it's on to the next storm, which both my sons said there better not be another one of these.
if you live in
New England, yeah, so
there you go,
what
right?
Are you gonna do? Exactly.
Oh, if it makes you feel any better, I checked my old hometown before we started a podcast, and right now it's a balmy -25, but there's no wind, so there's no wind chill. I mean, it's 0 mph wind, which also means that because it's in a valley, Fairbanks is in a valley, it basically smog builds up. Oh, by the way, and it's going to get colder. It's going to dip down to -30 according to this weather.
So that's like, that's like the opposite of it's a heat, but it's a dry heat. It's a cold, but it's a smoggy cold.
Yeah. At least it's a windless cold, right? I mean, -25 without wind is bearable. With wind, that is life-threatening.
I will say this morning, the temperatures were single digits when I first went outside, but there was no wind.
Burn.
And I will be honest with you, and the sun was coming up, and I'm like, this is bearable.
It's that
even when it's like 20 degrees air temperature, but there's a nice 15-20 mile an hour wind blowing, that to me bothers me a heck of a lot more than true cold with no wind.
Go ahead, John.
I was just gonna say, we have exactly that down here right now in Mississippi, where some mornings I'll look and the surface temperature will be 20 but no wind. I'll go out, go for a walk, no problem. It can be 40 with a wind and I'll stay in. because it's just going to be miserable.
When they started calling wind chill temperatures real field temperatures, that's a lie. Because a minus 10 real feel in their mind in reality is probably too damn cold to even report. that real feel is just an absolute misnomer.
Well, what I was going to say is, you know, in freezing temperatures, you know, below 32 Fahrenheit, I remember my dad and I used to go out and barbecue in the snow with, you know, just t-shirt and shorts on. We're pretty happy, you know. But anyway,
yeah, my hardest part was our puppy, which she's getting to be the size of a small tank while she's still a puppy. But she had never experienced a serious snowstorm before, and we were worried, you know, when she had to go outside, what she was going to be like.
Yeah.
Fortunately for her, she's all legs, so she reminded me of an at-at. She kind of was above the snow.
Well, I'm glad everybody's okay where you are. It sounds like it was pretty miserable in lots of other parts of the east and northeast.
Yeah, I'm sure just south of us, I know the city of Boston really got hammered, and just south of Boston really got hammered as well. So we'll have to wait and see how. And, you know, like any big city, when you get hit with that, there's no place to put the snow. Boston Harbor is not a snow removal site. It doesn't work that way. So. Yeah,
you can't just pack it to the iceberg in Boston Ocean.
You want to brew something, you can brew it up there.
Well, at any rate, Donna, you know, I'm great. I'm glad to have you on. It's, you know, I was going to note to you guys that depending on how you count, we're kind of entering the third year of the pandemic now. And it's been really interesting catching up with friends like yourself, Don. As you know, we caught up with friends we haven't had a chance to talk to in 10 years or in the last year in our catching up series. And it's been wonderful. You know, so if nothing else, the pandemic reminded me to catch up with some old friends, and we acted upon it. So yay! So how have you been since we last spoke to you in September? You've had power, so that's good.
that's really up at the top of the list. It's been busy. Todd, you know it. The IT world never stops.
Nope.
It just adjusts to the climate and conditions of the time. So it's been a busy time, but a good time. It's interesting. I think maybe we'll talk a little later on. I've noticed an interesting trend lately in the IT world with security and some fun offshoots. That's how we say some side effects to it as
side effects.
The one thing is you're never bored when you're in IT. There's always something new that crops up that you're dealing with.
Yep. Like Christmas Day, 7:40 p.m., etched in my memory, I get a call. Power just went down in the data center. And that was that next morning, December 26th was supposed to be our podcast day. But I was doing IT stuff, so that was a lot of fun.
Yep. No, it's interesting. I think one of the things I've come to the conclusion that, and I think it's great that the mainstream IT world is becoming more aware of security concerns and vulnerability scores and things of that nature. But the side effect to that is talk about herding cats and trying to constantly keep up with change. I think the best example of that was recently when Microsoft released their cumulative update for December, which covered, I don't know, something in an exponential number of CVEs. And when you see something that large, you go, you know, how much testing really went into this guy? You know, it's such a large cumulative update. And sure enough, that was the one that went out and proceeded to break DNS.
Oh, boy.
On domain controllers and broke native VPN, Microsoft. So they had to issue a patch for the patch. But it's really fascinating that I think now and so many of these companies, Microsoft themselves do it too, are so big on reporting vulnerabilities, and to try and make more awareness, they do this, like, they'll give like these vulnerability scores. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't understand the fact that the day I discover the vulnerability, you know, and if I'm Microsoft and I raise the score, that doesn't mean that there's an instant response to it.
Right.
And so everybody starts, oh my gosh, the score's high. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to, if there's something else we could do to mitigate other than that, it's let's just
wait.
Keep on watching for that patch to come out.
But we're going to unplug all the network cables and tell people we're close.
And hope the patch doesn't break more stuff.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I'll give you the other offshoot was Log4j. When that vulnerability came out, I think the biggest thing was people, the old risk management principle of two, you know, what's risk, risk impact, but what's risk probability?
Yeah.
You know, when you look at what Log4j was, unfortunately, it shipped in almost everything. Yeah. But in 99% of what shipped, they weren't server-based. These weren't systems that were up and running constantly, or they were things that were internal and behind the firewall. But everybody was, oh, my gosh. And, yeah, you want to take action, but it's sort of, it was okay. Let's calm down. Let's look at this, you know, with its proper, healthy respect and react accordingly instead of going into general panic with the arms flailing, running around the room about it. And again, I think it's fantastic. I'm seeing more and more in the IT world of the tools are there to make people more aware. It's not just InfoSec specialists anymore.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot to, but there also needs to be a lot of education because there's a lot of, you know, a score comes up and somebody panics and it's like, okay, step off the ledge. Let's deal with it. I got to ask you, Don,
you know, back when we first met, you were more of a DevOps guy. Are you more of an InfoSec or a DevSec kind of guy now?
Well, no, I'm more of an IT in general. I've moved away from the developer side.
Yeah.
And I think that transition happened. You and I, we've been around long enough. We've known each other long enough. I went from doing a lot of mobility and development to a lot of mobility in the enterprise.
Deploying
devices, and then it was MDM, then, went from that to the acronym of the day became enterprise mobility management. Now it's unified endpoint management. And having been on that bus as it's continued to go along, that's also expanded even into more and more IT because now unified endpoint management is just about everything, from desktops to mobile devices. And you look at what's going on with policy management that goes beyond just the mobile devices, but moving away from things like SCCM and moving away from, GPOs and all the old Active Directory stuff.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say it's everywhere except for, the place where it should have been.
Yeah.
Right. It's always that one thing. Oh, you guys didn't.
Yeah, but it's
you
did
that.
So people are like, well, how? So you've been an IT and admin for Microsoft, and I'm like, no, it's just it's sort of I backed into it to a certain extent because I was the products I worked with sort of started to absorb the Windows desktop and Mac OS. Yeah. Into the unified endpoint management circle. And I just, having been around those at different points in time, I got involved. It's funny because probably about 20, 25 years ago, just because I needed to know, there was a lot of desktop admin kind of things you had to know back in those days. Mm-hmm. But now it's pretty much comfortable circle.
I know what you mean. And in the early days, and I'm older than both of you two, in the early days, you had to do everything by yourself. You know, sort of like, I think it was sort of like the Model A, Model T days of driving a car. You couldn't just be a driver. You had to be a mechanic.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you were working in an enterprise environment, even when I was working in enterprise as developer, you had to understand Active Directory.
Yeah.
You had to understand, a lot of times you ended up having to understand GPOs. You had to, and at times you had to understand some of the other tools too. Like I said, you had to have a little bit of SCCM knowledge in a Windows world, even as a developer, just to be able to develop accordingly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
When people say, where did you get that experience? Ironically, that experience, my initial experience came from being a developer rather than an IT person principally. But my entire career has been in the enterprise.
I think about it a lot when I talk to younger IT guys now. You know, I think about my first real long-term consulting job. I was the only person to ask questions to. I didn't have anyone to go to because it was a small operation. And these guys today, you say to them, well, you know, you're just going to have to figure it out. Well, I can't, there's no help desk article. There's no, you know, the vendor doesn't have anything on that. It's like, well, sorry, I never had a vendor to even go to. We had no relationship with vendors. It was, you know, no budget for that. Saying that was better, but it definitely got you thinking a lot more.
And let's be honest, AltaVista was not a search engine for
AltaVista. Oh my gosh, I forgot about that one. It was actually pretty good, though.
Well, you had to have a CompuServe ID. Come on, guys. That's where we went back in the day.
I still to this day remember battling with a certificate issue on a Windows 2000 server and doing something that, according to Microsoft, was impossible. But I didn't know it was impossible until after I'd done it. So, you know, reading the article a few months later going, oh, yeah, there should be no way I did that. Huh? Wonder how I did it, because I had done so many different operations that day. It was, well, let's try this. Let's try importing, exporting this way, that way, et cetera. Finally, it worked, and I thought, okay, good, it's fixed. And then find out 3 months later it was supposedly impossible.
So I don't know, and unfortunately our listeners couldn't see my facial expression when you brought up the term certificate. And the reason why is is there any of a number of people who've worked with me over the years that know what that facial expression is without having actually seen it, just knowing what my expression?
Yep.
Because in the world of technology, the word certificate is about as narrow and focused as the word car. But everybody thinks that when you say, oh, I've got a certificate issue, you know exactly what those words, exactly what their problem is. Just like going into a mechanic and saying, my car doesn't work, fix it. Well, what kind of car do you have? Why are you asking? It's a car. So, yeah, it's kind of crazy with all of that. Oh, I plugged something in here that just came unplugged. Speaking of IT, there.
Now, speaking of pre-IT, really, you know, it's funny, yesterday I was reading a mini interview with, I think, Kernighan, you know, one of the co-creators of Unix. And our buddy Frank goes, gee, Todd, you're really old. You know, you remember stuff. Because I had mentioned that I first discovered Unix on a PDP 1170 running version 7, not system 5, not system 3, but version 7. And I was one of the first four nodes of what would later become the internet.
I was lucky enough to work with a gentleman back in the early to mid 90s who was involved with AT&T.
Yeah.
And actually had the initial C manual, which was printed out like 7 pages.
Wow. So this is pre-Kernighan and Ritchie. This is pre-Kernighan and Ritchie, the C programming language.
Well, Todd, you know, based on your really old comment, I have one thing to tell you, and that is 327 days, 5 hours, 9 minutes, and 20 minutes.
My retirement time stream. it's getting closer. Oh, I'll tell you one more old story. So I bought many decades ago, I guess I can say now, I bought an Epson MX-80. You guys remember those printers? Dot matrix printer. It was state of the art at the time, you know? And brought it home real excited, realized I had no way to print from my computer. So, you know, when we were talking earlier about running virtual machines and device drivers not even there, I had no printer driver. And so I had to write one in assembler.
I just for total humor, when we talk about the IT world and everything, when you work with certain vertical markets, you also talk about the fact that thanks to the software they run to make their business run, they're stuck on old versions of operating systems and things like that. I actually recently worked with somebody who, unfortunately, and they recognize how unfortunate it is, we were trying to do some work with a Windows NT5 machine.
Wait, 5?
Yeah.
Wait.
Yes.
5 is Windows 2000, right? No? Because Windows
NT4. Yeah, it was a four. It was an NT4.
Yeah.
Because it was pre-Windows 2000.
Yeah.
It was a Windows server.
Yeah.
Machine, and it's because the software they used to run some machinery has never been. Now, granted, that thing's has never been exposed to anything.
Right, right. It's completely isolated.
It's
air gap
connected.
Yeah.
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 But you talk about, I was like, wow, I was having to remember how to access menus and things like that. I was like, boy, talk about no longer having muscle memory on that kind of stuff.
Trivia note, if you go into a Windows 2000 box and you look at that system about, it says NT5.
That's right. It still says NT5 in that.
Yeah.
But it was fascinating. There are still a lot in very specific, we commonly hear about medical is one that always has a time with that, with a lot of systems and everything else. But yeah, a lot of manufacturing too. There were basically serial interfaces.
And airports. How many blue screens have we seen in airports? He says, well, when was the last time there was a blue screen? That must be Windows 2000 box or something.
It's absolutely, amazing to see as far along as we've come, how some industries seem to be frozen in time, for lack of a better term.
I remember going to one financial institution as a customer, and I happened to look at the PC they were working on for me for my account. And this was not that long ago, maybe 10 years ago. They were running Windows 2000.
Yeah.
And I know a fairly large, local, not a nationwide, but a local chain store. I looked at their point of sale device. It was running DOS.
Yeah.
they're happy with it. Their point of sale app worked fine.
Yeah, it works. I mean, 10 years ago, I was looking at a group that was trying to do Wi-Fi authentication, and they needed an NT4 domain for it, and they just hadn't bothered to figure out how to do it under Windows 2000. And I remember offering my assistant, saying, when I took that exam of migrating NT4 to 2000 back in 2000, I never thought I'd need it in 2010 or 11, we can talk about it. And, but the funny thing is I had a conversation with someone the other day about some of the tools that have been around for 20 years, password resetting an NT box by just editing the SAM and stuff like that. And it still works. It's quite ironic that some of that architecture, if you knew it 20 years ago, you still know how to do it today.
Yep. Yeah, it's amazing how much if you encounter a problem, even with Windows 10, and you go, gee, I wonder if this thing's still hanging around in the registry here. And you go walking the registry, and then all of a sudden you're like, look, it still is. After all these years, they're still writing to that same spot in the registry.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing.
Also, I hate the registry. I really do. I passionately hate the registry.
I've learned it's a love-hate relationship. I've learned to live with it.
I know it's better than what used to be, with the old config files, the text config files. But at least the text config files are human readable in the sense that you could comment, and the registry is like gobbledygook half the time.
The other, like you said, it's all a trade-off. I can remember the nastiest word in the IT language was config.ini. Because you knew that was something that, yes, somebody was going to find a way to corrupt or delete off their computer.
Yes.
And that was the end of it. And again, here we're back talking from my development days, where a lot of times that was the way you did it.
Yep.
You shipped an INI file with your application.
Yep.
So if there was customizations that needed to be made, unless you were super sophisticated and had the right tool set to where your installer could ask questions and then write that to the registry.
Yeah.
But, it all depended on what you were writing in and what tools you had back then. But it's amazing John, you were mentioning a little while talking to younger guys in IT, and it's funny talking to them about the tools. There is so much available today to the IT person to use, sometimes to an extent of confusion. know, it's almost overwhelming if you're a new person coming into the IT world. What, you know, with all the varying tool sets, it's one of the things I find a lot of times that can be difficult for me going to see a client for the first time, is trying to capture in their organization how many different things are they managing, how many different ways, and going, you know, it's 2022. We might want to see about pruning this down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and mm-hmm. you know, because that can be rough.
And one of the interesting problems is, you know, we were talking earlier about in old days you had to do a little bit of everything to be in well, pre-IT, really, there wasn't really any IT in the old days.
Yeah. But processing.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. And it's kind of, but you know, the DIY is coming back. I was just reading an article somewhere about what they call citizen programmers. You know, where non-professional programmers within an enterprise, you know, grab a low-code, no-code development tool and just start building stuff and nobody else knows about it.
But see, that's just the latest iteration. How many people built Access?
Oh, please.
You know, Access work group applications and then realized they didn't scale past like three people. Yes. I personally made a good amount of money in the early 90s on converting those applications because they would hit a wall very quickly. But yeah, don't get me wrong.
You know,
I'm all in favor of those types of solutions, but I'm always with the caveat of don't program yourself into a corner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And Microsoft Access is an excellent way to do that, to program yourself into a corner.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of the failures I'm going to have to live with when I retire is I will not have been able to stomp out every single Microsoft Access application out there in enterprise, which is kind of my, you know.
It's been your mission.
You know, if I could physically set fire to them, I would, you know. But I'm going to fail at that, and I need to accept that as a failure. And you can't fix everything. But hey, speaking of fixing things, look, John migrated before it got fixed. So last week we were talking about the legacy G Suite being gone, and now it's not. And John said,
I mean, it's mostly gone. So what they basically said was you can at least migrate from a domain G Suite to a commercial Gmail account, which would have been something I might have done with one of my accounts across all of my like six G Suite installations that I have. But no, this week I moved everything to just straight email forwarding. I will say that iCloud custom domain, which Apple introduced just recently, and now you can actually set up on Apple devices. You used to need to have a MacBook or PC and do it through the web, but now you can do it through the iPhone. It's pretty slick. It will do all the DNS record configuration for you, including DKIM and SPF and all those things that you need with DNS. And it just sort of, as you would expect from Apple, it just works without much of a problem. So I migrated my primary personal email to that, and then everything else now points to that. So, yeah, I went through all the work this week of getting off of G Suite and making sure I had a searchable solution for my local archives of email, because I wasn't going to port over, you know, 17 to 20 gigabytes from, you know, Gmail to iCloud. But, yeah. It's kind of nice. Now I have just two email accounts to log into any of my devices, an iCloud account, which I'm already going to log in anyway to get my iCloud stuff set up, and my work account, which is an Office 365. But otherwise, I took my personal Office 365 and just forwarded it to the iCloud account. And So yeah, a lot of work for me, Google. Thanks for now having this migration option. I probably will migrate still that one account when they do make it available. But I had thought about it was freedom getting off of G Suite. Like I said last week, I had this love-hate relationship with it. I had it for free, and I thought I might use it one day. I don't want to get completely off of it. So when Google said we're taking it away, I thought, okay, I won't feel guilty at all about ditching it at this point. Because I've seriously been thinking of ditching Gmail for a while, just for, you know, my general distaste of what Google has done with some of their products and policies over the last few years.
Yeah. And for Don's, if he didn't hear last week's podcast, you know, my grump is not the Google side, it was the Microsoft, because although Outlook Premium sunset back in 2017. They've grandfathered me in all these years. Now, every year they've made it harder and harder to renew because it's a paid service. And this year, there's no way to contact a human. And I've tried. So I am unable to renew my, and it still says I can renew if I can find somebody to renew it for me. You can't do it online in a web page. But so I've been sort of trying to figure out how to migrate stuff off. I took a look at my MX records. I think it's going to just forward. I just won't have a custom domain anymore, which is okay. But that's my grumble. I have one more thing I wanted to mention before I asked Don about one of his topics I'm kind of curious about. And that is, I just wanted to mention, I just read an article in XDA Developers that UCSB Type-C ports are showing up in power tools. And I mean, not software power tools, physical power tools, which I think is awesome because I could never find a stupid, you know, proprietary charging cable for various that things.
You're right. I mean, that is one place where proprietary power has thrived is in the is in the power tools realm.
Go ahead.
I was just going to point out, XDA Developers is an amazing website to me in that they started with one very small thing. I mean, we know what the original XDA was.
Oh yeah.
And now they have really expanded their purview and what they cover and all those things.
Yeah.
Back to XDA Developers. It was one of these little websites that only a very small niche of people do, and now
yeah, a lot more. Yeah, I mean, yeah, XDA is essentially meaningless to most people who go to that site these days, probably. You know, why are you called XDA? You know,
I was talking to somebody the other day that I work with who's younger, and he mentioned XDA Developers. And I said, have you ever seen the story or read the backstory? No, was his answer. And so I gave him kind of the backstory of it. And it's fascinating to think how that site has totally evolved over the years.
I mean, there's so many good sites that never made it, like my own site, you know, never made a transition from, I was getting, and back in the day, you know, when 20,000 page views for a single story was a thing.
Yeah.
But then I never transitioned it. And so it just kind of went down and down and down. It's kind of, you know, as we say, the fives of, you know, listeners these days. But
Explaining to somebody how in 2003 you could get press credentials to CTIA because ran a little website that just happened to get a lot of page views.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. Yeah, that's why I was reminiscing about that the other day, you know, just remembering, and it's amazing how far things have come. And like I said, those are have evolved, and you look at XDA Developers, and fortunately they made a nice transition in the Android world, and whether or not the morality argument over custom ROMs and everything else, but they survived, and there's still a great reference site for so much information at times. It's crazy.
It's just interesting to me how they started out saying, okay, we're going to cover the XDA, which was O2's implementation of the HTC Wallaby.
Right.
And then it became, you know what, maybe we should just cover all HTC things.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a good way to expand on. And then it was, maybe we should cover this Android thing, because HTC is making these Android devices, so maybe we should cover that. And then that really was like, okay, good. Now we have something big enough to really keep a website going.
Back in those days, it wasn't so much covering. It was adding new forum.
Yeah, they were just adding new forum.
It's like, oh,
you know, like 40 different forums, one for each device.
It was amazing. That was, to me, was the amazing part of it was, you know, it started out principally while there was news, it was almost overwhelmingly one of the most active forums for all of this. And like you said, it just kept growing and growing, and we'll widen it out, we'll cover this. And it was just that series, like you said. We go from XDA to, HTC makes the XDA, and they're doing other things. Let's cover XDC. Oh, they're doing Android, so let's add Android to the list, you know, and it just took it from there. So,
by the way, I just looked it up, and HDA Developers is going to turn 20 years old this coming December.
Yep.
So
that's pretty amazing.
While it's been dormant and non-functional for a number of years, I received notification and a reminder that, as a matter of fact, January 1st of this year was the 20th anniversary when that our Boston Pocket PC launched.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was the 20th anniversary. We launched in 2002. Steve Hughes and I took over the user and developer groups in 2001. Here in Boston, and then decided to do the website. And I think I reserved the domain name in November of 2001 and built out the site on, oh, there's another post-nuke. Oh, the good old days of PHP nuke and all its forks for news and forums and stuff. Great CMSs. God, great open source CMSs back in the day. But yeah, it's 20 years. That to me is just so amazing. How much has transpired over those 20 years, and most to me at the top of the list are all the people that I came to know as a result of starting that, and then how things progressed. Yeah. And it starts with Steve.
Yeah. Steve Hughes. Yep.
Yeah, and but then all the people we met, and then obviously all the work that we came together with the MVPs and the friendships and the relationships that still last to this day out of this, and it's been a wonderful 20-year ride. I can't say enough for I feel very lucky that we were able to make that ride and meet so many great people along the way and do so many great things as well.
Yeah. It's been a wonderful, wonderful ride. It was the Windows CE mobile pocket PC, palm size PC, Windows hand. I wish they had branded it just correctly, you know, so we just talk about one thing, but it was a wonderful thing, whatever you call it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. And speaking of the last 20 years, so you have a son that's applying to college now? That's something new in the last 20 years.
Yeah. So my younger son's going through the process. Well, he's been going through, obviously. He's a senior in high school, so he's been going through the application process. And,
since last year, yeah.
And realizing how things have changed thanks to technology. And John, I'd love to hear your take on this too. So remember back a generation ago when I was a boy, applying to a university, all the paper that was involved between applications and, you know, typed up essays and everything that would then be bundled up. And then everybody had their application fees and you'd mail everything and hope that it got there if you didn't do it certified. And then you waited forever for an envelope to appear. Now, between Common App, which is one app to rule them all, for the most part, with, and then they're the little variations. But my gosh, first of all, the first thing that stunned me is how few universities actually require an application fee anymore. And most who do give you a waiver if you apply by a certain date. But it dawned on me, I'm like, I can only imagine what it was like if I'm one person sending that application process, the human workflow back in those days in paper must have been amazing. But now it's so electronic and the responses, yes, there's still the traditional wonderful packet that shows up at the door, but half of his acceptances have come electronically first.
Interesting.
Yep.
That's interesting.
And I mean, some of them have been ridiculously fast. I am floored. But again, it's to me, you couldn't help but doing when I was a boy.
Well, you know,
we had to walk our paper application uphill in the snow.
I certainly did. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that, Don, because it's not even going back to our time. You know, my daughter graduated from high school. Not quite 10 years ago, so not quite a decade ago. And even then, a lot of the stuff you're talking about didn't exist.
It's
like electronic notification, everything came on paper.
And John, I don't know how much tie into from knowing the admission side of things. Boy, has that made everything so hyper-competitive with the university.
Yeah, Yeah, so there's a few things I can speak to. And I was actually at an admissions recruiting event earlier this week. So I, you know, there's a couple things that are blessings and curses of these changes. The blessing is, yeah, it's fast and it's competitive. And you, if you can get in and get someone excited, you know, you've got them. The problem is students have somewhat forgotten that there is a human element. Yes. So especially where we get most of our students that I see are transfer students. Our community colleges down here are very, very good at getting you in immediately. Mm. And like, you know, you can wake up at 8 a.m. and go, I think I want to go to college today and be sitting in a class probably by 1 p.m. You know, you show up. You do your paperwork. It's a one-stop paperwork system, and they give you a class schedule and say, here you go, and you're in. They then, when they come to university level, they think we move that fast as well. So we'll have typically on the last day of registration for a semester, which is a week and a half into classes, you'll get students that will show up and go, hey, I want to go. I want to take classes this semester. Well, have you done an application? No. Okay, this is, we don't move at that speed. We can't, you know, and because you think about getting transfer work in and articulating it into our systems and all that, and we've tried to find as many ways to go as fast as possible, but I think because of the way that a lot of this has happened, students have forgotten that you might want to give it more than 5 minutes of thought before you apply to college. It might not be the thing where you wake up and go, oh, it's the last day to register for classes. I guess I better get up there and register, even though I've missed a week and a half of class already. It's a blessing and a curse. Yeah. And some schools have way easier ways to do it. Some of the tech is interesting. I've seen, you know, different products that will, you know, auto-create welcome videos for students that slipstream in the text of the student's name and major and things like that.
That's pretty cool.
You can send a flashy electronic acceptance that, you know, it's the same video, but your information is loaded in, and it's fun to watch, but it's also the pragmatics are not always there.
Well, the other thing too is obviously the technology aspect of it. If a school is, what's also amazing to me is a school sending you electronically a notification of acceptance and being able to provide you financial aid information like right then and there. Yeah. And part of that, let's be honest, part of that is the competitive nature nowadays, you know, between, you know, the classic presidential scholarships, you know, endowment monies, things of that nature that they're willing to offer. It's, I'm sure that part of the technology factor is, okay, let's crunch those numbers. That's the other thing. Financial aid with FAFSA. It's a pain to enter. It's a pain to enter in that information. But compared to what it used to be, the entire process, it's fractional, the amount of effort that's involved, and that makes a huge difference. I will tell you, and you brought up a good point about the impersonal nature. One thing I will say, and we made a point of this, is, and we were fortunate in the sense that my son didn't want to leave the New England region. He didn't apply to any school that he did not visit.
Oh, interesting.
He made sure to visit during college days at all the schools and that he was applying to. I shouldn't say, with the exception of one school that he has been to, that it's in our area, and he's been there so many times, he practically knows the campus already. It's a smaller, ironically, they're nationally, internationally recognized for their online in Southern New Hampshire University. Yeah, that's, but the other schools, we did take the time to actually visit and not just walk around the campus. We went during open days. We made the, you know,
sure. Yeah, the official visit
time.
The
tour, yeah.
Yeah, and that's important. Official visit.
And it actually changed. And I think that's important because if he hadn't done that, it kind of changed his perception. There were some perceptions on some of the schools he was somewhat interested in that after visiting the campus, he became far more interested. You're right, John. It's too easy nowadays to just spit it on and be completely impersonal. I hope that kids aren't just doing that, that they're still taking the time to, because it's a big decision. I mean, let's face it. It's a big decision, and you don't want to do it in a vacuum.
And that is one of the things we know from our own admissions is that if we can get a student to campus, we pretty much get them 100% of the time.
Really?
Because once they come to a campus where, you know, my university is small enough where we know our students' names and we know what, you know, what they want to do, but big enough that we have variety and we have student yeah. life and all of those things. So we can offer a experience that a lot of students will come to us and say, you know, your tours were so much more in depth and I got to meet actual professors and I got to do all these other things that I, you know, and a lot of my transfers, they'll spend a year at a large university that they know for a sports team or they know for some other thing. And they'll say, well, I don't know why I even spent the time there. They didn't care who I was.
Yeah.
That's because you went for the name.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And no, it's interesting that you mentioned that for perspective. One of the schools that my son decided to visit was one that he initially had in his mind that there's no way he'd ever go because he thought it would be too big. And that was University of New Hampshire, which in the scheme of state schools is not that big. as speaking as somebody who, you know, knows Florida state schools.
Yeah.
you know, the thing of it is he finally went to visit the campus, and we'd actually been around the campus before for sporting events, but we had never really taken the tour. And the way the campus sits and is designed, and the class size, the average class size and everything, it's still not a small school, but it is far, he had a far different read on it after he had been there. You know, so again, it's nice that this, I think it's fantastic that it's so much easier and so much more, you know, I would call it streamlined, automated, and, you know, technology advanced to go through this whole process. But if you don't take advantage of the human elements and go visit and talk to people, yeah, you could end up regretting it big time.
Yeah. And, you know, I just think a lot of students forget that going to college should be somewhat of a big deal. It should be something mm-hmm. that you have, you know, thoughts yep. around. My area, it's very interesting because we live in an area that is such a high poverty rate that students understand the importance of college. They know it's their ticket toward a better job and a better career and a better life. Yeah. But they still don't really quite know what college is and how it's different than mm-hmm. high school because their parents didn't go to college and they don't have anyone to ask. So I don't really, when my students come to me the day registration closes and they're shocked that classes have already been going on for a week and a half, I can't really fault them that much because who would have told them?
Yeah. Yeah.
No.
You yeah. know, in their mind it was, well, if this is the last day to register, it's like, why? It's like, you know, if Netflix were to say tomorrow was the last day to sign up, why wouldn't I be able to sign up tomorrow right before they close it? You
yeah.
know, it's, yeah. college yeah. is a different world than signing up for a service or signing up for a product.
Yep.
And, you know, I wouldn't know how to go to college anymore. I remember, again, my daughter, you know, entered college nearly a decade ago. And I remember when she registered for classes, I don't know about you guys, I remember standing in line and being very scared I couldn't get classes and didn't know until the end of the day. She did everything online. I said, no, that's wrong. There's no drama. <You know? laughs> There's no anxiety, you know? It's like, what?
But when you say, I don't know, you know, with God, I know after a couple of visits, all I could think about is, well, I think I'm just going to forget everything and I'm going to college. This is such a nice experience. And I will say it's one thing you know, up here, we're in the Northeast here and so many schools and never mind so many schools, such diversity in schools and the size and the curriculums. And of course, also you have the schools here that have been in existence. And I'm not just talking the big names, but even some of these smaller colleges that have been in existence for a couple of hundred years. And you look at these campuses that are these gorgeous, quaint, like, I hate to say it, it's like very photogenic campuses, you know, gorgeous parts. I mean, we went to visit one school in Burlington, Vermont, and it was absolutely like, it was just amazing.
Like a postcard, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And a great school as well. Yeah. But I mean,
Before I forget, if I'm reading this correctly, I think Logan just closed.
And again?
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. Well, they it was yesterday. They did during that. I mean, the city down at Logan, they said visibility was for most of the day was down to a quarter mile or less. Wow. So the airport basically canceled almost everything. Jeez. And I know there were, as of yesterday, they had canceled a bunch of flights for today in advance, knowing full well they weren't going to be able to get planes in. But the problem is, like I said, the biggest problem you have in Boston proper when it comes to storms, and the same thing any major metropolitan area, is where do you put the snow? You know, because it's not like there's a whole heck of a lot of places to put it. And as a result, when we've had big major snowstorms, you know, especially in some of the neighborhoods in Boston, you know, it's like days, if not weeks, you can't park any place because it's all piled up in the streets.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't have, they make enough of a path to be able to get a car up and down. You just can't pull into a parking spot on that
street. I was going to say in Alaska, you know, which is much less populated, you know, where I was is much less populated. It's not a big city. You know, they would just literally pile up the snow into, you know, 8-foot drifts on the side of the road, and there you go, and the kids would go play in them and stuff.
Oh yeah, in my neighborhood, my plow guy managed to blow about 2 feet of snow about 10 feet into my driveway. you know, they don't. It's you've got space to do it, but it's the cities that, I mean, they talk about the big one here in Boston that's still in New England in general that always gets talked about is the Blizzard of 78, which was one that was, you know, it was more than a couple of feet. And yeah, there were people, I mean, for days they couldn't clear snow to get to, you know, a point where they could get people out of homes and things like that. So while it's gotten better, it's still the city. As a matter of fact, I know I'm supposed to be down. I'm assuming I'll be fine, but I was, as they were giving snowfall totals, I'm supposed to be in Watertown, which is just a few minutes to the west of Boston proper. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering if I was going to be, I was going to be going down to visit my client down there tomorrow morning.
Well, I just saw... I was just checking weather as you were talking, and it said yesterday Boston got almost 2 feet of snow.
Yeah, they did get more than us. I do know that Boston and parts to the south of Boston really got slammed. And I was watching some coverage last night, and when you've seen it enough, you've been around enough snow, you can tell by how it's been plowed how much they've gotten. And when I'm looking at plowed and it's like over people's heads,
right,
I'm saying, yeah, they've gotten well over a foot. They're on their way to 2 feet when you can see some of the, because it wasn't like they were piling it up so much as they were just plowing and plowing, and it was just piling up
just to get it off the roads, and they don't really care where it goes after that.
Yeah. And that was near Logan, as a matter of fact. That was up the road in Lynn, Mass, which is literally, if you leave Logan Airport and take the road to the north, it takes you right into Lynn. Yeah. So,
well, at any rate, I'm glad you guys are okay. And it's been a lot of fun talking to you, by the way. It's, you know, thanks for, well, thanks for understanding about my weather situation last time.
Like I said, there was that moment where I'm like, you know, it could be that Todd is watching the Wicked Witch of the West on the bicycle fly by right now. I don't know.
Well, it's funny, you know, because it you know, that was that Kona low was, I think it was it Christmas Day? I think it might have been Christmas Day, and the 25th. And just, you know, our hurricane season ends November 30th. And I was just telling people, well, we dodged that one, you know.
you didn't realize that all bets are off moving forward when it comes to seasons.
Yeah, you know, it's like John Lennon wrote, right? Instant karma is going to get you.
climate change doesn't seem to want to live by a schedule.
So, and by the way, Don, you know, I didn't wish you a happy new year because I have no idea what kind of new year this is going to be. But I have been advising people not to say to me, well, it's got to be better than last year, you know, because so far, not so much, you know.
Remember, set the expectations low and be pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. And as I've, you know, John has heard me say this to a couple of people, my new greeting for 2022, or my new New Year's wish to people, to yourself now, Don, I will be amongst the people making this wish, is I'm trying to give a upbeat wish for 2022 that I'm pretty sure is plausible, if not probable, highly. And so may you have a zombie-free 2022.
Again, set the bar low, be pleasantly surprised.
You know, I'm not saying it can't happen, because what the heck? We're in year three of the pandemic. You know, I'm at this point, I'm ready for anything. Maybe not that.
who would have thought the phrase under promise and over deliver would apply to life in general?
No kidding. No kidding. But in any case, it's been wonderful to talk to you. Glad we were able to catch up. Sorry about the last time. Thanks for understanding.
No worries. No worries.
It has been a wild couple of years, hasn't it?
It sure has. But like you said, if there's you try to find the silver linings in these times, and like you said, the reconnecting with people.
Yep.
As you did, you know, I think is one of those. I think it's important to keep on remembering that there are those silver linings, and keep on trying to find more of them as we move forward, because that's what gets you through these times.
Yep.
And you know, interesting thing about these catching up podcasts that we've been doing within Mobile Views is, even though we don't get together much anymore, at least I haven't seen you guys in person in over a decade now. You know, we can catch up this way. And for those who can't make it to our little catch up sessions, they can listen to it whenever they feel like it, and they can skip through stuff that bores them, you know, which you can't do in real life. You know, like
I will say I have seen more friends that I hadn't seen in the last 5 or 6 years. I've seen more of them in the last year because of all of this and taking advantage of the technology.
Can you imagine that this happened 15, 20 years ago, right?
True isolation.
Yeah.
That's the only way I can think about it, is absolute isolation. Don't get me wrong. This is a substitute, but not an equivalent substitute for face-to-face contact, but it's a heck of a lot better than...
And healthier.
Like you said, it's a heck of a lot better than 15 years ago. I probably would have been climbing the walls.
Just had email. That's pretty much it when you think about it.
Oh, the forwards we would have sent.
Email.
No, and... I picture like the 1800s writing from the war.
Ah, yes. My dearest.
My dearest today. Jonathan. Yeah. The pandemic continues to go poorly for us.
I know.
Mama has had breathing problems.
Yeah, it would have been. Yeah. Well, and also, we would have had per message text costs. 15, 20 years
Think
ago.
Think about the abbreviations we would have come up with. You know, it reminds me of that old, I forget which company did the collect call ad back in the late 90s. That was, the name was Bob, we had a baby, eats a boy. Yeah, who was it? Oh, it was Bob. They had a baby. It was a boy.
Sigh.
Yeah. No, I could see, like you said, abbreviations. Actually, the use of FFS and other ones probably would have been accelerated by about 15 years.
Oh, boy.
Dealing with stuff around this pandemic. Oh, but boy. Yeah, it's like I said, I can't imagine. I honestly, during those times of lockdown, if it had happened 15, 20 years ago, you worry about people feeling isolated.
Yeah.
Even with all of this.
Yes.
I can only imagine. True. I can only imagine the feelings of isolation.
Yeah.
You know, we don't have in this country, because, you know, we don't really care much about people. But other countries have like a ministry of loneliness and stuff springing up to help with all of this. But, you know, we don't care, apparently.
I think the ministry of loneliness got edited out of Orwell's draft of 1984.
No, no, it's next door to the Ministry of Funny Walks.
There you go. Which eventually got taken, you know, there was a big plagiarism trial.
Yeah.
Anyway,
if we were titling the last segments in our podcast, this one would be first name Bob, last name we out of virus, it's the COVID.
Oh boy. Any rate, thanks again, Don. Hope your son has gets to college, into the college he wants to go to, and is happy there. I hope the pandemic's over by then, or mostly over. Because this whole going to school, I don't know how kids are doing it these days, especially the young ones. It must be really, well, your son's in high school, so it must be really tough.
Yeah, he's been very fortunate to be the last year and a half, because last year they were able to make it through the year with one shutdown, a lot of protocols in place, a lot of contact tracing, a lot of safety to keep it, but they managed to make it through a year in classroom.
Wow.
Last year. And they've done it again this year. And he'll be the first person to say every time he starts to grumble about the protocols and everything, he remembers about the shutdown, the lockdown, and having to just suddenly, and the schools weren't ready for it. Nobody was ready for it. And he remembers that experience. And they've been fortunate here. They've been very fortunate. So,
all righty. Well, you guys take care. And this has been Mobile Views Podcast 391. It's been good to talk to Don Sarcinelli again. We'll talk to you next time.